This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Hello.
How are you doing today, sir?
Good. Steve, is it?
It is Steve.
Steve, how are you? It's Patrick.
I'm doing very well.
Good.
I was actually planning on interviewing you today on camera, but traffic today became a nightmare.
Oh, dude, I saw. I mean, I was coming from Santa Monica. Were you coming from the other way? I saw that it was just banked up.
I was coming from the valley. Let's just say it was a little far.
No, I saw it was banked up coming the other way, so anyone coming from the valley, I was like, good luck to them.
Yeah, that's the reason we're on the phone.
Cool.
So let's talk a little bit about, you obviously, it's been a number of years, you did a short film in 2008 called Signs, but before that it had been a number of years since your last short, or at least according to IMDb. So
yep.
What did it take? I guess you could talk a little bit about what was going on in those years, and could you talk a little bit about where the idea, you know, for Red Hill, how long ago it was?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it, you know, I've been making shorts since I was a kid, and then I was fortunate enough to go into film school straight out of high school and did 3 years at film school making heaps of shorts. I mean, you know, Internet Movie Database isn't referenced. I mean, I think I've probably made about 25 shorts. You know, and then I'd written a script. It was a big film that got a lot of heat, and I went into development and with different production companies and studios and stuff. But it always eventuated. I was writing scripts that were just too big. And then I felt like, you know, my career, I started working commercials, and then I was fortunate enough to have a very successful run at that, and get to shoot all around the world doing commercials. You know, and you get to work with the best practitioners. So, in between all that time doing commercials, I was always writing, and also, you know, every couple of years or wherever, you know, find time to go out and make a short. So, I guess that's what I've been doing over the years. And then Red Hill just really came from a frustration. You know, it was probably the fourth script I've written. I knew sitting down to write it, I just said it happened very quickly. You know, from writing the script to standing at the world premiere at Berlin was under 12 months. I think it was like 11 months or something. So it happened very quickly because I just sat down and said, right, I'm just gonna make a movie on my own, and I don't care if if we don't have a distributor, we don't have anything, we don't have government finance, we're not waiting for anyone. We just set a date. We're going to shoot it on this date. We're going to raise the money privately, and we're going to try and get the best cast we can and just go out there and make a movie. So that's kind of the mentality. I was really kind of had an epiphany, you know, like I think every filmmaker has that frustration, that catch-22, no, unless you make a movie until you make a movie. You know, it's the same old story because unfortunately you have to convince so many people and you have to, you know, it costs a lot of money. So I just actually physically just wrote down a list of my favorite filmmakers, and then I realized every single one of them, all their first films were made with private money and no distributors, and they just went and made their own first film because, you know, that's how you open the door to Hollywood, and how do you get noticed, and how do you get representation. So, it was kind of like, in a way, it felt like I was going back to film school, and the mentality I had then about when I was making shorts was kind of just applying that in terms of, you know, we're making a feature film.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've spoken to a lot of quote-unquote up-and-coming directors or actors, and it's the same thing. It's the same story. You need to, as you just said, you need to show people. It's like you have a very, very strong first feature for a calling card.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's opened every door possible that I could ever imagine, you know, like because once we'd finished the film and we didn't have a distributor and I mortgaged my house and put a lot of my own money into it, and I had, you know, a lot of private investors that had put money into it, and we had the world premiere at Berlin, and literally 48 hours after our world premiere, we pretty much sold every territory around the globe, and, you know, it that was a huge sigh of relief at that point. You know, it was really exciting. I had a lot of fun in Berlin.
And even
that, you know, I would have been happy to end it there. But then, of course, you know, I've got really great representation now. And then selling the film to Sony in the States and having Strand releasing it. And opening in the States, too, before we open in Australia. Because we're due to open in Australia on November 25th. So it's really exciting to have this, in its essence, was this small little film. But, you know, I don't like to sell it like that because I think that... Because of, you know, obviously my career in commercials, able to work with the best crews and the best practitioners, and you create these relationships, and you're able to bring, you know, I don't think our dollar budget doesn't represent what's up there on the screen. You know, it feels like a big movie and it looks big and it's, you know.
No, I completely agree with you.
I just know that's why Sony won't let me say how much I made it for. watch the DVD commentary. I'm going to reveal everything because I'm so proud of it. But when I sat down and wrote this thing, like I thought I'm going to write contained. I guess I knew that if it was going to be this country town story, that shooting in the country doesn't cost a lot of money. You know, you can do a lot of stuff for cheap. Like, so we had main shootouts on Main Street. And, you know, we just blocked traffic because there was no traffic. It was no big deal. Like, the council was on our side. All the town's community came out to help. So it was really, it kind of felt like we're on a mini back lot. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like we could put the camera anywhere. Oh, let's put the camera on that roof and get the shot from up there. Let's do this, let's do that. There was, you know, it wasn't like if you're shooting in the city, you got to go through all this red tape and you got to get location permits for everything. It was just literally just knock on people's doors and say, oh, do you mind if we shoot in your property and use your barn? Yeah, sure. Why not? Great.
So I have to ask you, does that mean you're having a mini premiere in the town you shot in? And what town did you shoot in?
We are indeed. I'm really excited about that. We shot the movie in a town called Omeo. And that was the biggest gold rush town in Australia. Back in 1890, its population matched Melbourne. It had 40,000 people. And, you know, if you imagine, you know, when you watch a show like Deadwood, I mean, that's exactly what this place was like. And, you know, there's beautiful old photographs and drawings and sketches of that bygone era that are hanging on the walls of the pub there. Because they found one of the biggest gold nuggets in Australia was found in this small town, Omeo, where we shot it. And that's where the National Australia Bank started, because some guy found this huge, huge gold nugget, and he said, can someone look after this for me? And some guy put up his hand and said, I'm going to be called the National Australia Bank. And, you know, so what I was drawn to with this town was, you know, it's about old and new, and it's about the changing of the guard, and it's about a town that is, at its core, it's rotting and it's dying. And you get a character like Old Bill that's protecting this town. He's sort of like a corrupt king, so to speak. And his connection to the past, he's refusing to let go of that. And then you take Shane Cooper, who's a representation of the future, and you place him into this environment. And, of course, Shane becomes our moral compass. But, you know, that town has all those old western frontages, and you know, because it used to have a population of 40,000 people, there's all this sort of empty houses everywhere, and I guess I was always looking at these small towns, and there's something really creepy about them, because on a Saturday night, it's just, you could hear a pin drop, do you know what I mean? So because everyone lives on these farms outside of the town, and you've just got empty Main Street, so you've got this infrastructure that was built for all these people, but no one's living there anymore. So it really did kind of feel like a backlot. I think the biggest thing we did art direction wise was the council let us chop down all the speed signs and the stop signs and stuff like that. So we just chopped down any of those signs, and we had this beautiful sort of western town.
No, I mean, and it looks it on film. The I definitely want to ask you. You mentioned this was like your fourth script that you were working on, and the first three, you know, you wrote and no development. Is it sort of nice now that you have made your film? It's really great. You can sort of say, I have these three scripts that are sort of ready to go.
Yeah, look, I think certainly there's probably a couple of them shouldn't ever be made, and I think that's the process of a writer too. You have to go through that process of writing things. But there's certainly, you know, there's stuff in my drawer. There's one in particular that is awesome now because it's opened every door I could imagine in Hollywood, and now I'm able to just say, hey, well, I've got this. And, you know, foolishly, the first script I wrote was a big, fat movie that needs, you know, it's a big action thriller and it needs $40 million to make. Don't ever write that as your first script, but it's kind of like, at that time, I wanted to write that story, and that's what I wrote. But I think it's such a learning, I don't think you're learning ever, you know, like people say, oh, what do you think, film school? I say film school's fantastic, because I spent 3 years, and all I did every day, 9 to 5, was wake up and breathe and live movies and filmmaking from every process, you know, producing, writing, directing, you know, DOP. So you learn every sort of aspect of it. And at the same time, you're able to turn around so many sort of short films, and at the same time, you're not being judged, which I think is really important early on in, you know, when you're making short films, is that you don't want to feel like, oh my God, you know, people are over-criticizing your work, because you've got to go through this incubation period where you're trying to find your voice and you're trying to find, you know, hone your craft.
Well, I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about the editing process, and obviously when you're doing this indie, you're trying to cut corners as much as you can, make sure you're not, you know, filming what you don't need. Did you end up having a lot of, like...
I wanted to, you know, in terms of the way I was shooting the film, I wanted it to be very lean, sparse, raw and mean, you know, like a big influence was films like Deliverance, where you get that sense of isolation and you know, there's such a simplicity to them. And High Plains Drifter, and so, you know, it's sort of a simple story, but it sort of unfolds, you know, like that idea that Shane's putting together a puzzle, and it's throughout the course of this day, this you know, it's the worst day in the history of policing that he goes through. This, he's able to learn and grow from this situation, and something good comes of it. Yeah, I think, you know, certainly I was going for that lean, sparse sort of execution, and you know, I was hopefully trying to bring a lot of film craft to it and make the experience highly cinematic. I think, you know, if you're going to make a movie, you don't want to just end up making a TV movie. You want to make something that you want to see on the big screen, you want to experience, and I think the atmosphere and everything was really crucial. But it certainly was difficult because of our schedule. I mean, we shot the movie in 4 weeks. We had to shoot 5.5 pages a day. If we weren't shooting 5.5 pages of script a day, then we weren't going to get the movie. So it meant it was, you know, it's really difficult on everyone involved because it's just really grueling. And we were doing 10-hour days because I felt like, you know, if I'm going to have people up here busting their gut, I'm going to sort of respect the time constraints and not make people work 16-hour days because no one wants to do that in night shoots. But, yeah, I think it was about sort of, we just had to be really sort of specific about knowing exactly what you want, exactly what you need for the edit, and move on. And as soon as you've got the right take, just move on. And, you know, thank God with the caliber of actors that we had, we were able to rehearse the scenes in a lot of time. We just shoot one take and move on, so...
Well, could you talk... I'm definitely curious, and I'm sure I'm running out of time with you, but I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about how did the movie change at all, whether it be through, like, a test screening, through a friends and family screening. Did you have your first cut and say, you know, and there was an aspect that needed some work, or was the version that you first cut the version ultimately that you released?
No, the first cut was 2 hours long, so... I think it was really sort of, you know, you just got to go through that process as well. I mean, I certainly, you know, I look at it and, you know, when we set out to make the film, it was like, you know, going back to people like George Miller, you know, Mad Max and Coen Brothers, where they made Blood Simple and get that mentality. I mean, I don't know if you've seen Knowing, Christopher Nolan's first film where he shot on weekends with a 16mm camera and stuff like that. So it was that mentality. It was sort of like, you know, there is going to be a level of compromise and you've got to accept that. Like, nothing's going to be perfect, especially on this budget. And, you know, it's just at the end of the day, just tell the story. That's the goal. Right, and if you can get the story on screen, it's kind of, I feel like it's kind of like warts and all filmmaking. To a certain degree, I feel like I've made one big sort of showreel. So, you know, this is to open those doors so then you can turn around and with your next film, get, you know, get a real budget and get a real sort of studio behind it.
Totally. My last question for you, so you can go talk to other people. Do you envision that your next thing is going to be back in Australia again? Or are you, like, while you're here in the States, you know, taking all those meetings, trying to drum up financing for something else?
Well, I've moved here now, and the script that I've got in my drawer is set in L.A. It's a big action thriller, and the other scripts that I'm working on, I'm doing a trilogy of modern-day westerns called Three Colors Vengeance, Red Hill, Black Valley, White Mountain. And it's three modern-day revenge stories set in 24 hours in three separate towns in three different countries. So Black Valley is the next one, and it's set in a sort of lawless border town in Mexico, a fictitious border town. And that's about a drifter that walks into this town, and it takes place over one day. That's sort of and, you know, obviously just taking meetings and pitching on a whole bunch of stuff at the moment.
Well, listen, I wish you nothing but the best. I really, really thought your film was great. You know, I hope that everything works out for you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And thanks for coming to the film.